But I remember recently looking at a Kushan coin from the 2nd century and just thinking how this small coin kept at the museum possesses the context, the layers, the stories, the ideologies, the mores of the time that it comes from. And that you are able to experience that in the 21st century, kept right in front of you. It's like time manifests itself in these objects, and they're right in front of you, waiting to be seen, waiting to be heard.
This is the For Old Time's Sake podcast by Theosology, hosted by Eric Chopra and Kudrat Singh. In this podcast, we dive deep into the fascinating and multi-layered past of India, all while keeping histories of emotions and experiences at the core of our discussions. Here at Theosology, we believe that nobody should feel left out of history. We're not just sharing stories about the big names, dates, and places. We are also uncovering hidden gems from the footnotes of history. From overarching themes like society, polity, and economy, to histories of art, gender, sexuality, fashion, horror, and more, we have got you covered. Welcome to this captivating historical journey.
Hello, everybody. This is Eric Chopra.
And this is Kudrat Singh.
And welcome to another episode of the For Old Time's Sake podcast by Theosology. Now, today, Kudrat and I are talking about a topic that is very sacred and special to the both of us. This is the idea of the museum. And while we will be talking about the National Museum in New Delhi with the focus on the series of walks that we have done at this institution in the last few years, we thought it would be a good idea to just discuss what the museum means to us. So, Kudrat, what I actually wanted to start off with is just the feeling, the sense of excitement, the curiosity that gets evoked when we visited the museum for the first time. And I wanted to ask you about your first visit to the museum. When was it? Where was it? And, mm-hmm. and how did you feel?
So as a child, I was taken to the museum, as we are, with my parents from school. And those experiences were obviously very, very different from when I visit the museum today. I would go in with an absolute sense of disconnect from what the objects in the museum mean. I would look at them as objects of wonder and beauty and nothing more. So as a child, in my earliest experiences at the museum, I did not feel that the objects really spoke to me. It was definitely nothing like Night at the Museum. I mean, I was expecting these sculptures and people in paintings to come out and tell me about themselves and help me through a grand adventure. But I experienced none of that as a child.
Yeah, I mean, that's what stories do, right? When we know the story, it all feels so alive, you know, breathing almost in front of us. And I think, I mean, it's good that you talk about The Night at the Museum, because this is a movie which literally situates itself in the museum. And it has all of these people from different epochs in time coming alive in the night. And there is a very interesting story unfolding, which is geared for kids. So you realize and you think about how these things are also, these spaces and institutions are literally built, keeping in mind that people from a very young age will come to these institutions and they will find something interesting there. They will find that childlike curiosity almost. It starts in spaces like these.
Yes, Eric. And I do think that why we had a negative perception of museums as children is also because of the way that we were taken there. I mean, school trips, for example, they take you around in lines and you barely get a few seconds with every object. And you have no one who's there to tell you a story that really captures you.
Yeah.
And makes you feel connected to the object or to the museum in general.
Yeah.
You're just walking in a line. Of course, you have your friends for entertainment, but that doesn't really help foster any sort of relationship with the museum.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, this is maybe a personal experience for both of us. Perhaps this is not universal, but I think the stereotype goes that a visit to the museum, if you're going for a school trip, you're just gawking, walking, talking, right? You're just in these rows and you are moving from one gallery to another and you're just staring at these sculptures that are staring back at you and you are not really understanding what is it that they're trying to say.
You're waiting for the ordeal to end.
Yeah, you're literally waiting for this ordeal to end because you're like, why have I been placed in front of a second century stone sculpture and what am I supposed to do with it now? So I do think that there is, of course, the part of storytelling or museumization, which we'll speak about in a bit, that is very important to the experience of the museum, wherein you go, you try and understand how are these things placed, and then you try to figure out what's the story that is being told.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, from our experience of doing it, I mean, we've been doing museum walks for the last, 4 years now.
Yeah.
And we've really understood the museum in such a different way. I mean, it's been such a learning to really engage with all of these objects and to see the stories that are documented in them. What do you think has been your biggest takeaway from conducting these museum tours?
Well, for one, I now enjoy the museum more than any other place, that's for sure. And apart from that, I think just the feeling of introducing the story behind a particular painting or a particular sculpture to people for the first time, and then to see the excitement in their faces when they find out that this is actually something totally unexpected. I think that has been my most wonderful experience at the museum. So my favorite sculpture at the National Museum in Delhi, for example, that of Vasant Sena, which is right in the third gallery when you enter, it is such an interesting experience every single time, because at the face of it, so just a little bit of context, initially she looks like this very distraught woman who's being held up by two attendants. And, you know, it paints a very somber picture. But once you actually go into the details and the context of this particular sculpture, you realize that it's actually bacchanalian. So she is drunk and she is being carried away by attendants from this state of drunkenness into a more private space. And every time that our audience has heard this, they have had the heartiest laugh.
I know.
And at the same time, this is the experience, right? Once someone really tells you what a sculpture says, whether it's a book, whether it's a person leading you on a museum tour, that's when the experience really becomes profound for you.
Absolutely. I completely agree. And I think we also never get tired of then talking about the same thing. And I mean, this is so true for the Dancing Girl. I'm sorry to our audience. You get to hear so much about the Dancing Girl from us, but it's just, it's that her story is just with us all the time. And, you know, we talked about this in our first episode, that when you learn about her in your school books, this is for context, the Dancing Girl is this bronze figurine from one of the world's first civilizations, the Harappan civilization. And she is this very small figurine, right? But in school books, you do not really realize how small she actually is.
Yeah.
Till you come to the museum and see her for the first time. She's in the first gallery, one of the first few objects in a glass case, standing with that poise. And it's fascinating, though, that each time we talk about her at the museum, each time we have talked about her, there's something new that we have understood from what people's questions are.
Yeah.
Right? So each time we think, okay, this is the end to our interpretation, especially because with Harappa, you do not even know what they were saying. The script is undeciphered. So there's only till a certain point that you can go with your interpretation. But then you have an interesting question, right? Mm-hmm. For example, could she be wearing perishable material on her? Mm-hmm. Which of course, you know, because jewelry is sculpted on her. I'm going on a tangent, am I not? Yeah. Anyway, that's for you to discover. Listen to our first episode. But I'm saying that there are so many questions, and the experience of going to the museum with the community, the questions that emerge, the conversations that are that happen, it makes it so much more enriching. And I think that's the joy of going to the museum. That is, you come back knowing so much more.
Yes, and it's interesting that we are able to have these experiences at the museum now, because the first museums in India, for example, were not so accessible. And the purpose with which they were set up was entirely different. So a lot of the earliest museums were actually started by small elite groups of scholars or intellectuals, of course, predominantly British, and not the government. So they were not accessible to the general public. And their purpose was very specific. They were supposed to be, quote unquote, serviceable to history and science. and meant exclusively for people who wanted to conduct research. The general public was sort of left out of this entire process because the purpose was to collect and not to display for the public.
Yeah, and you know, this British endeavor of collecting, documenting, studying, exoticizing, all of this we see in numerous activities that they do, be it from the paintings that they're making of different classes and of different tribes and of different people in different workforces, and of course, even at the museum. Now, what was at the Colonial Museum? And of course, Kavita Singh, in her pioneering work, has talked about the kind of displays that one would see at the museum, what was displayed at the Colonial Museum. And she talks about how there were botanical specimens, there were zoological ones also, but she mentions this display and collection of curiosities. And I quote from her work, she says, you know, there were curiosities like the hairballs from the stomach of a goat or the skull of a thug, all jostling for space on the shelf. And this idea of exoticizing Indian landscapes and people was something that we even talked about in our last episode, in which we literally talked of a case of a man and alongside him many other who were museumized at the Colonial and India exhibition that took place in the 19th century. So you do have this curious gaze, this exoticized gaze that is very prevalent in the Colonial Museum. Even Travis Zadeh, in his exemplary work called Wonders and Rarities, which I would urge all of you are listening to read, even in his introduction, he speaks about these newfangled institutions, in which he talks about the coming in of the colonial museums in places like Madras, Calcutta, Bombay, and Jaipur. And he says in his introduction, and I quote, "The real wonder of the East, the lesson went, was to be found in the primitive beliefs that kept the Orientals from being truly modern. In this way, the museum could isolate, freeze in time, and decontextualize the goods and materials of an exotic landscape into an unchanging tableau."
Right, Eric. And because this was the prevalent ideology of the time, it prevented a mass of people from actually encountering the museum. But this, of course, started to change towards the beginning of the 20th century, after which, and of course, post-independence, the museum took on a whole new character. And this brings us back to talking about the National Museum, which is located in New Delhi. So the National Museum was set up in 1949, and this was at a time when many newly independent nations were trying to forge their own identity across Africa, Asia, and Latin America. And museums were now repurposed to be reflective of the spirit of nationalism and, in a sense, to reclaim the histories of the places where they were built and to give history back to the people who belonged to that particular nation. Now, to accomplish this feat was not going to be easy. And so experienced museum professionals had to be brought in. One such eminent personality was that of Grace Morley, who had earlier worked at the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art, and she was actually the first director of the National Museum in Delhi. In her own words, Grace said, "I'm very excited about the possibility of turning all my knowledge and skill to presenting the cultural heritage of an ancient tradition in a way to serve the nation of today in taking its place in the modern world of technology without losing any more than is absolutely necessary of the values of the past."
Wow. And, you know, when Grace steps in, I think it's 10 years after the building was already there. So she comes up in 1959. And initially what we are seeing is when the museumization process begins at the National Museum, the collection there is originating from the Imperial Exhibition that happened in London in 1947. And it has materials that span from the third millennium BCE to the early 19th century. And this expansion of this collection only occurs because of the scholars and curators from across India in the 1940s and 50s going around and getting material to be museumized. And finally, it is in 1960 when the museum opens its doors at the Janpath Road in New Delhi. And of course, Nehru is there, Grace Morley, and many other young curators who would go on to play a major role in the other museums that would come up in India. They're over there, they're curating a walk. And this is how the National Museum comes up. And to all of our listeners, if you want to know more about the story of Grace and the National Museum, we would highly recommend reading Christy Phillips' article, Grace McCann Morley and the National Museum of India, in which this entire story is talked about. But Kudrat, this is the beginning of the National Museum, and now we are coming towards its end, actually.
Because it's refashioning.
It's refashioning because it's moving now. And it's important that we talk about this because just last month, we wrapped up with a series of museum walks called The Last Walks. And these were walks in honor of this historic institution, which we call our Grand House of History.
And the whole reason for doing the Last Walks series was because the National Museum in Delhi is set to be demolished. Once the original building goes, a new National Museum is going to be set up in the north and south blocks of Raisana Hill. And so we thought that it was important to take people back there one last time and to reintroduce them or introduce them for many people who came for the first time to this museum to the wonder that is the National Museum. And we also brought back some of the walks that we did there in previous years. Our favorites, of course, were Stories and Sculptures, where we only talked about sculptures, of course, spanning epochs, and also satire and desire, which is another thing that people rarely see in museums. So this walk was based entirely on the emotions that pieces of art convey.
Yeah, and Kudrat, there are truly so many emotions that these pieces of art convey. I remember that when we were at these walks, especially the last ones that we did, we were remembering B.N. Goswami. And we were talking about how when you engage with a piece of art, that piece of art possesses ras, right? There's flavor in it. But you are not isolated in that experience. You become a rasika while you're engaging with an artwork. So there is an interaction, there's a conversation, there is this discourse that is forged between what was and what is, that is you and this piece of history. And it's fascinating, especially because, you know, I've talked to you about this. There are certain things that, you know, do not interest me as much as they interest other people. And that's, well, that's going to happen. That's bound to happen. I mean, I love history, but there are certain areas of history that I love more than the other. But at the museum, I felt that something like coins, you know, I'm not really that fascinated by coins. I find the history associated with them fascinating, but perhaps the whole idea of coins minted do not evoke the same sense of curiosity or wonderment in me that a sculpture does or a painting does. But I remember recently looking at a Kushan coin from the 2nd century and just thinking how this small coin kept at the museum possesses the context, the layers, the stories, the ideologies, the mores of the time that it comes from. And that you are able to experience that in the 21st century, kept right in front of you. It's like time manifests itself in these objects and they're right in front of you, waiting to be seen, waiting to be heard. And this experience, Kudrat, of just viewing these remnants and putting them in their context and remembering their stories and remembering the people behind these objects, it's overwhelming. It's surreal. I see that in the eyes of the history aficionados with whom we have gone on these walks with. And I see that sort of childlike curiosity come back when we go into those Buddhist galleries, for example, and we see in one gallery Buddha being depicted on slabs with his footprints or the wheel or the tree. And then we move into the Kushan gallery and there he is, the Buddha as we know him, you know, bearing the 32 signs of a Mahapurusha, elongated earlobes, the Ushnisha and the Urna. And it is magical that the transformation that just happens from walking from one gallery to another. But when you know the story, it's literally like time traveling. And I think that is what makes the museum such a magical place.
It is a magical place indeed, Eric, and the museum has been a place where we have been able to open a door into the past And we do hope that everyone listening to this podcast is inspired now to go and visit their nearest museum. And do write to us about your favorite museum memory and what it means to you.
Yes, you can write to us on our official Instagram page, which is Itihasology, or you can write us an email at itihasology@gmail.com. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the For Old Time's Sake podcast by Itihasology. This is Eric Chopra.
And this is Kudrat Singh. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you again in our next episode.